Welcome to Season 8, Episode 12 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we talk about killer robots. We also discuss turning video games into role-playing games. Again, welcome to Season 8, Episode 12 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this episode is Chris. Hello.
Hey there.
We don't know what happened to Tristan. He was supposed to join us, but hopefully everything's okay with him. So we're going to persevere because this episode is already 1 week late as of this recording.
Yeah, the killer robots got the last one.
Yeah. We tried to record this last week, and it would have been a good episode, but... I'm going to be blunt. I fucked it up. I forgot to check how much space was on the digital recorder, and there was insufficient space on the recorder to record the episode, so it cut out about 36 minutes into the episode. And the bad news is that made it, I couldn't, we were in the middle of the first topic at that time. So we couldn't actually even use the first half, the first topic and just re-record the second topic. Which was annoying. Mm-hmm. Only goes to show that maybe one of these days it just doesn't make sense. It's like, oh, I could, record one topic and then go record a second topic later, and that's just a lot of work. Yep. It's easier to do it the way we do it. So I guess we will go ahead and hit the news, I guess.
Works for me.
All right, well, why don't we, first up, we'll talk about the Origin Award winners. How about that?
That sounds awesome to me.
Between last week and this week, of course, they were announced. Interestingly enough, from what I see, Fantasy Flight Games had a lot of winners. Board Game, Imperial Assault. Let's see what else. Board Game, Imperial Assault. Miniature Game, Star Wars Armada. RPG, Star Wars Force and Destiny. I've seen a theme in their wins.
Hey, they had a light day.
So that's kind of interesting. I mean, I never heard of this Game of the Year, Codenames.
That one intrigues me something fierce, because I've never heard about it until I looked it up in this article. We know nothing about it, and now I want to see what it's about, just out of morbid curiosity.
It's listed under the Family Games as well as the winner, so it must be like some sort of quasi-board slash, arcade-ish game. Really a card game. Because they have a card game category where Seven Wonders Duel won, which I don't know what that is.
Okay. Well, I went to Board Games Geeks just to do a quick check, and it looks like it's some sort of spy game. Well, where you have teams to compete to kind of make contact with all their agents first. So it sounds kind of intriguing if that's what it is.
Yeah, it looks like it's $15.50 on Amazon.
Okay.
That ain't bad. That's a pretty good price.
That'll be definitely a good way to spend the afternoon, that's for sure.
It doesn't really show anything else from the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you need at least four players, though, I think is what they're saying.
Well, it makes sense. If you have teams, you need at least two people aside.
Two people aside, yeah. It's some sort of word game, apparently. So, that's kind of cool. I like that.
And I'd be curious to see what this DC Comics Dice Master War of Lights is all about for WizKids.
Yeah, it's a dice game.
Okay, to answer that question.
No, I mean, but that's what it's. I mean, it's. I don't know. It's one of those weird things where I don't really get into the collectible games at all. It's like I don't want to collect Pokemon cards or Yu-Gi-Oh cards or weird fucking dice for my game.
Yeah.
I want to just play a game. I don't want to have to collect for it. I don't have to try to make the deck, if you will. That's what people, when I understand, that's what people do with the old Pokemon game, or not Pokemon. What the hell am I thinking of?
Magic the Gathering?
Magic the Gathering, there we go. Or Crack the Edition.
Exactly.
Set
up a whole new form of money making, that's for sure.
And in many ways, it's what saved RPGs in a way.
Yeah.
Indirectly, because, WotC hadn't. And release Magic the Gathering, it wouldn't become popular. They wouldn't have been in a position to buy you know,
what's left of TSR.
So, you know, it is what it is. So, but yeah, so that was kind of interesting. You know, it's interesting because probably next month we're gonna have to, because, you know, obviously, I don't know, I don't think it should be next episode, but probably the episode after that, where you need to do our any award guesses.
Oh, definitely, because let's be honest, that's part of the draw of the show.
I don't know. We were discussing this actually before we started recording that, you know, the innies are kind of weird, just in not that I have a major problem with them, except, you know, it's like, it's a popularity contest. But the weird thing about the popularity contest is the judges get to decide where a product goes and what category. And their explanation is that, well, if we have a product that, you know, meets our criteria and is accepted, then we put it in a category. And sometimes they create new categories just to put products in.
So in short, or
they'll shove a product in a category that it almost doesn't make sense to be in. And the only problem I have with that is that it kind of can force the deck where a certain product will not get, couldn't, you know, can't get a fair shake, or it indirectly, it, you know, the people that submit it don't think it should be in that category. That's why freaking Obsidian Portal stopped submitting themselves.
Yeah, I remember that story, because they were sick and tired of being convinced as a web game, being used as a website, when they considered themselves more of a gaming tool, or was it the other way around?
Right. So, and not that I have anything, I like, you know, I love Micah, you know, he's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
Obsidian Portal, good idea, although at a certain level, I find it easier to set up my own website and my own wiki.
Well, that's because you got skills, man.
I'm just saying. That's just me. So anyway, the Origins Awards happened, which is kind of cool. And, you know, we'll do the innies when they come. At Gen Con, speaking of Gen Con, Pathfinder is to hold an all-star live RPG at Gen Con, where Eric Mona, Jason Bowman, Wes Schneider, Crystal Frazier, and I guess Benjamin Loomes? Is that how you pronounce his last name? Loomes?
I think it is, man. Yeah.
Is going to do a one-hour audience-driven game. Now, it's funny because in some ways this kind of reminds me of Hickman's Killer Breakfast.
Oh? Oh, yes. Yes, I think I've heard of that before.
Except, obviously, game designers are the people on the forum. It's almost the opposite in a way. You know? Well, instead of Hickman just generating stupid shit and forcing your players to die and for new people to come on board.
That's pretty much the long and short of it. You want to play? Great. Hope you enjoy your 5 minutes of fame.
Yeah, pretty much. It was, you know. Although, honestly, I love the, was it Return to the Castle of Gax?
Oh, you mean Castle of Zygax?
Whatever. It was another one of those old school dungeon, you know, slaughter fests.
And they where you find a god and he kicks your ass?
Well, just some of the old school gamers would come and run sessions that were just grind fests. Like Tim Kask would sometimes do it, and other guys, some of the old gamers.
Yeah.
You know, and it was fun because it was unique, because you could actually play with guys that played with Gax.
Yeah.
Which meant that your Gax number would be really low. Because you would get a 2, because, you know, or is that the way that works? If you're 0, you're Gax. If you're 1, you've played with Gax. If you're 2, you played with someone who's played with Gax.
And, yeah, let's not try to do necromancy at this point of the game. So,
yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just kind of funny the way that works, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so basically the audience can alter the plot as the game proceeds.
Oh, good lord. I know gamers, this is not going to go well.
So, you know, it's on Saturday. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. Then you can get tickets at GenCon. .com.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going there, it might be fun to take a look and see what these. Let us know how it turns out.
Yeah, I guess they've done this before. I mean, it's kind of interesting. So, and then I guess you gave us this one that I guess Happy Jacks is having JackerCon.
Yeah, which, JackerCon,
which
it's,
is a
it's, it, online con, for lack of a better term, that happened. Yeah. on a regular basis here. I just thought it'd be only fair because I'm, you know, I'd love to attend, but honestly, I get my schedule gets crazy busy, so I'll do the next best thing and promote the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And basically, I think it starts Wednesday. If you go to the JackerCon website, you can actually sign up for their Google Groups, Google Group, Google Plus, and they'll be able to tell you all sorts of crazy games. Because last I heard, all the games were different, so there might be something there just for about everybody at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Roll20 actually recently had their own little Roll20Con online game, but I didn't bother with it because it was like on a day and time that I just wasn't interested in doing anything.
Yeah, well, I was kind of hoping that by the introduction of online cons would actually be the way of having your cake and eating it too, where you go to your con, but at the end of the day, you go to your nice warm bed at the end of the day, and you know that way you don't spend a lot of money and just go from there. But then you found out because you're not taking the time off, you're not really attending a con.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's a lot of ancillary value to cons that, you know, you go to. Although, you know, I keep saying, as much as I've enjoyed going to the Gen Cons that I've gone, it has just gotten way too big for me.
Yeah.
I know longtime listeners will know that I've said that many, many times.
Yep. I don't know.
I just don't know how else to put it. It's just, it's a lot of fucking work to go there and just be like, oh, like Gen Con right now. I'm sure. I mean, I don't even remember, but I think the housing block like sold out like fucking like 45 minutes or something bizarre like that. And you know, trying to find a game you want to play, good luck. You know, yeah. If you don't get on it right away, you know, and it's like we're always adding things. Well, that's fine and dandy, but that doesn't do me any good. It's like yeah. I don't. You know, it's one of those things where it's like I don't even know why they bother printing the freaking. They have the book for the con, the convention guide, if you will, and it has a lot of the games listed. It's like, it doesn't do you any good. You might as well not even list them anymore. You know, it's like, who the hell doesn't have a smartphone or access to a computer almost?
That is true.
You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be cruel and, you know, I'm sure there's people that can't afford that. And, you know, God knows the connection bandwidth there is horrid, but it's like, you know, your basic option really these days is just to buy some generic tickets and just show up at a game and hope other people don't show up.
Yeah, and that seems kind of, I don't know, skeevy a little bit here.
It is, but, you know, it's about the only way to do it these days. Because, you know, I've always gone, almost any time I've ever gone to something that's filled, there's always somebody who doesn't show up. So, at least that's been my experience, unless it's something super popular.
That is true.
So, I guess we'll get into the Kickstarters.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
You know, the Kickstarters, you know, it's weird. It's like in a week, there was actually only one deletion and one addition. Really. And the one addition had a really short time, so I listed it on the Google Plus page. I'm sure it will hopefully hit the Facebook page shortly. So I won't mention it here. You can. It's a Savage Worlds related thing, so hopefully just if you're interested, take a look, because it's going to end like in a couple of days. But we do have, first up, we have the Dynastic Races Compendium for Pathfinder RPG. And this is Everyman Gaming in partnership with Rogue Genius Games. God, I can't even pronounce anything. And it looks like it's a collection of, what did we decide, four races?
Yeah.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah. There's four races, the Kitsune, the Nagaki, the Samsa Run, and the Weiyang. And of those, the only one I really know off the top of my head is the Kitsune, because that's the Fox Woman thingy. The Samsaran, thanks to the power of Pathfinder wiki page, it looks like it's their version of Divas, because they're mysterious humanoids with pale blue flesh and transparent blood like the waters of a trickling brush. They basically have a cycle of birth to death to rebirth, so they're basically the Pathfinder equivalent of Divas from 4th edition, is what I understand there. The Weiyang are, what are they again? One sec. Oh, they are small supernatural humanoids that are basically shadow people. They're basically the equivalent of dark creepers in Pathfinder, from what I understand, just based on a very rudimentary look at these suckers. So that'll be fun to play if you want to play somebody who's a spooky little guy.
Yeah.
And what's the third one? The Nagaji, I'm pretty sure, is a Naga race, but let's make it official. Let's find out, because we have the internet. We will use it.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yep. Race of humanoids with scaled skin that mimics the dramatic appearance of true Nagas.
Yeah. So basically, you're ECL-0 Naga person.
Yay.
Okay, so now you know. And if it appeals to you, support it. If not, don't worry about it.
Yeah. So let's go to let's go to the Ninja High School anime and manga role playing game.
Oh, Tristan's mad about missing this one.
Yeah, I know. We talked about this one, and you know it definitely has like that. What do we decide? Like an 80s kind of feel.
Well, it's basically late 80s, early 90s anime. If you ever wanted to go to a Ninja High School, the manga and think role playing game.
Yeah.
You're able to use all those horrible stereotypes from the 90s and 80s, late 80s stuff, ranging from, blazing high school students. I'm sure I can mention other ones if I could think about that there. You know, all those freaking harem animes or El Hazard.
Yeah.
And then just sort of throw a bunch of nerds in there, try to have an adventure, and try to get to school on time, I guess.
Yeah, and it's built on the D6 game system, which is the same one that... you know, the old West End game, Star Wars game, was built on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And, well, that's going to be fun to see. I hope you like your bucket of dice and go for it and have some fun.
You know, honestly, that wasn't a bad game, you know? I mean, at least the old Star Wars version of it wasn't. You know, it was okay for what it was.
Oh, absolutely, man. Like, the Star Wars D6 game is probably the most influential gaming product in history because it basically wrote a sizable chunk of the Star Wars mythos in the process. So, well, I mean, done!
And who didn't love playing the failed Jedi?
Yeah.
Or the other... What was the other weird one? The,
I think there's an Acolyte Jedi.
No, basically. No, the Quasicatonic Jedi. The one that... I'm a Jedi, but... Because I think I'm a Jedi, but I'm not... But every... You know, it's like his Force powers were in the wrong order.
Yeah. He's a Jedi poser.
Yeah, pretty much. He doesn't have a lightsaber. It's like, I have a sword, and that will have to do until I find a lightsaber. That was so fun.
Damn it. But yeah, like I said before, if there's 6 anime characters you want to play in a group, I'd recommend Vash and the Major, but ultimately it's going to be up to you guys, turn with children, and go wild and see what happens. Because you can basically play things like students, teachers, geniuses, gun bunnies, ninjas, and mancuses. And you can fight crime, or possibly commit them.
Alright, so next up is one that I still considering doing. It still has 17 days to go. Urban Nights. Role-playing in the world of 1970s crime television.
I've been on such a 70s kick lately that it's basically acting like crack cocaine, which seems suspiciously appropriate.
Yeah. So it's just like, I love this because it's like, you know, the old Starsky and Hutch, you know. Hell, I would almost throw in like the old SWAT TV show.
Well, dude, 70s cop dramas
Or even like the old Emergency TV show, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or... shit, Beretta.
I remember Beretta, mind you.
You know, I mean, there's so many ways to go through this. I mean, you could list that. You could take Charlie's Angels. That was a classic example too, I guess. You know, the Rockford Files.
Oh yes, or How to Be the Face for the Real Detective, which is always fun. And of course, they're obviously playing homage to, of course, the classics Shaft, or Hill Street Blues. Depends how you want to play it. Or hell, if you want to go full exploitation, go watch the classics like Black Belt Jones.
Or if you want to go even more modern day, you know, farce on the old black exploitation movies, Black Dynamite.
Dynamite.
That is actually a crazy film to watch. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't yet, but now I want to.
You know? Oh, yeah. It's bad. My favorite scene, ironically, is this one where all the pimps are together and they're listing the pimps. You know, they're calling out the pimps. And it's like, and Captain Kangaroo. and I forget what the hell, who the comedian is, but his character was Cream Corn.
I can take it.
You know, so it's definitely one of those fun movies to watch just because it's so ridiculous.
Oh, I got one that's similar to that here. I just finished watching about a couple of months ago, The Nice Guys. That's that movie with Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling in it.
Yeah.
It starts as a 70s action comedy, you know, silly comedy, you know.
Right. Basically,
it's comedy. And then the third act turns into Chinatown, which is actually kind of awesome.
Yeah, you know, I might have to watch that when it gets to the Dollar Theater.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's like, I think it's already, it's been out long enough, at least in my area, that that's where it's heading.
I think it's safe to assume at this point. Too,
yeah. You know, either that or I'm just going to watch it when it comes to, you know, Netflix or something.
Well, again, you know, you want stuff, you got to pay for it. It's as simple as that.
Oh, no. I don't mind that. It's just, you know, sometimes by the time I get around to actually wanting to see it, it's like it's already out of the theater. It's like, oh, that's now I got to wait.
Yeah, I know. I missed at least that Vin Diesel thing the same way. I said, okay, I want to see it when the cheap theaters, and I missed it totally.
Yeah. So to kind of pair with this, we have the really expensive urban RPG City Rooftops.
It looks so good, but then you see the price.
Yeah, the dry erase, 6-fold, 27 by 18-inch, professional quality, high deal designs for your RPGs. And there's two. There's two different ones that you can get. Unfortunately, they're $45 a piece, I think.
Yeah.
Is what I think we'd figured out. I'm sorry. They're $33 US. They're $45 Australian.
Yeah.
So. Well, you
have to convert it through there. But
again, still, it's still pretty freaking expensive. $66 for two different boards. I love the concept. I love the design. But I'm not spending that kind of money. And he's only had 5 backers.
Yeah, that breaks the heart there. But, and also, I imagine selling from Australia really doesn't help matters much for trying to produce something like this.
Yeah, so.
You know, because talk about having me in the shipping black hole there.
Oh, yeah, well. Trust me, I know about the shipping black hole. I recently ordered something directly from China, and it still is just fucking in the void.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, but again, this would be perfect for, if you manage to want to put up the money and you actually manage to make it, it'd be a great place for your Ghostbusters, TMNT, superheroes campaigns, or Transformers.
Yeah, just about anything.
Yeah, this looks like right out of Daredevil. So it's a beautiful map. I'll let our audience decide whether they want to purchase it or not, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. So next up we have D&D Adventure League Experience at Carnage Con. So if you're going to Carnage Con, you might want to go for this.
Yippers.
I was about to say, it's like, you know, I'm all cool with that, I guess. You still have to pay your registration costs, of course. This is just for like some additional stuff that's going on there.
Well, if you're going to spend that much money to get the experience, you might as well go for broke. Well, maybe not literally, but you get the idea. Yeah. And they did make their cut, so they actually have made their 1,500 goal. So it's just a matter of, do you want in or do you want out?
So, next up we have the Claws of Madness RPG for 5th edition, and this looks very Cthulhu-esque, is I think what we decided.
Yeah, basically it brings adventurers to a small port town shaken by disappearing town folk. When they start turning up, horribly mutated fear takes hold, and villagers took the players to help. It's basically a low-level Lovecraftian adventure for your game, in order to see if you want to play. Like, it really gives me shades of, well, in his mouth, but whatever.
Well, you know, it's funny because really this is like just a D&D, this is like a D&D 5th edition take on the stuff that, you know, obviously, you know, Lamentations of the Flame Princess does all the time.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so it's just like, okay. But it's actually PDF only. I think that's right. I think there's no, you can get printed maps, but there's no printed books. It's all PDF.
Well, to be fair, that's the new model, because ultimately, you know, it's more money.
No, I mean, I get it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have no complaints there. So, let's see. What else we got? We got Stars of Empire, a VSF steampunk RPG.
And this one still intrigues me, something fierce, and I don't know why.
It has 51 days to go, and it's reached half its goal. It's asking for $4,000, and it has about two. And, you know what it is? It's because, realistically, you know, I think we talked about this before. We both like Jules Verne. We both like some of the old H.G. Wells stuff. And so this kind of fits in that kind of mold, if you will. And, sure. You know.
In Country and Gatling Gun.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. You know, I mean, it's, what do we got? A 200, they have 3 books planned, a 200-page referee's guide, a 150-page player's guide, and a 250-page ground vehicle source book, which, that seems extraordinarily large. So I don't know exactly what's going to be in the ground vehicle source book. That intrigues me.
Well, indeed, like, could you imagine some of the crap they come up with when they try to use things like the differential engine or a lot of those crazy designs that both Wells and Byrne came up with, as well as other later writers when it comes to filling the, you know, steampunk, the steampunk genre. Like, you could literally fight one of these land fortresses in the middle of the Weimar.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, let's see. What was... Yes. Because they have some, apparently they have some existing PDFs for this game system, is what I've kind of gathered. $25 for the download of the three new books.
So, that'd be a good place to start.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a printed version?
I'm not sure if $50 or more actually does it there, because it looks like it's primarily a PDF.
Yeah, it looks like you have to do the full party deal. Hard copy of the referee's books and two of the player's books for $100 or more.
Well, it's not the worst price I've ever spent on money.
Yeah.
You know, and you do get a crap ton of material, and it makes sense.
Here we go. $120. All three of the new books in hardcover copy.
Plus six of the books as download PDFs.
Yeah, you're much better off doing that.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And more importantly, like you said, if you're going to buy the ankle draggers and you're trying to produce these things, it's better to produce the more to keep the cost down as long as you have guaranteed sales.
Yeah.
And that's what Kickstarter is for, is, hi, I'm going to print a crap ton of books. How many do I need? Congratulations, you just predicted the price.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so last up, we have something that I like the idea of, but... They want too much money to start up. They want $35,000. And it is the Mystic Mapping System. Static cling maps for tabletop RPGs. And so these are basically those, I don't know, you've seen them in children's books where they have like the little, their little vinyl things and they like stick to themselves.
Yep.
You know, and I like the idea because, you know, you could carry these in a nice three, you know, you could have them on a something that you stick to and it has a nice 3D, you know, they actually kind of three-ring binder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the default, the core pack is 8 1-inch walls, 8 2-inch walls, 8 3-inch walls, 8 4-inch walls, 4 6-inch walls, 4 X intersections, 12 T interconnections, and 20 corners, and then 84 various decorative bits.
It looks, you know, like I said, it looks beautiful. It looks like a good design.
And let me see. You know, but it's weird because it's like, it's not too expensive. $18 for one of the core sets. Mm-hmm. That's not that bad. And for, you know, $36, you can get two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then for $54, you can get two of them plus one set of whatever additional unlock stuff, which I'm like, what's going to help you unlock? You're not going to reach your goal. So why? I don't know. It's just one of those weird, just like, well, that's all fine and dandy, but it's not going to get unlocked. I mean,
Well, again, you probably set them up before the thing happened, and then, you know, you just sort of let them ride there.
Yeah.
And again, they got 22 days to go. I'm not going to count them out until the final day.
But
now they're in the lull zone, so that's going to be interesting to see if they can actually make beyond, because they're only about 7K right now.
Yeah, you know, if their goal was like $15,000, then I'd say this is probably a possibility in 22 days.
Yeah.
But I like the idea. I really like the idea. I just don't think that... I think $35,000 is way too much for a Kickstarter on this.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not everybody's going to be Reaper Bones and knock it out of the park in the first try.
Yeah, well... I even think the Reaper Bones is stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember people saying, oh, I'm going to back this one. Have you even finished painting the last ones you back? No. Then why the hell do you need to back more?
Yeah.
I understand where Reaper's going with it, but on the other hand, it becomes unrealistic. You know, plus it's like, which wave did I get into? You know, I don't even know if they've shipped everything yet.
Well, again, it was a way to build a... For Reaper Bones' model work great for them. So if anybody's actually gotten Reaper Bones, tell us your responses and just let us know, and we'll bring it up in the next episodes or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know some buddies of mine, at least one of the early Reaper Bones, they did. And what they did is they went in with like three or four people and got a huge set, and then they just divvied up the things.
That's a good way to do it. That way you buy in bulk.
Yeah, pretty much that's what you're doing. And I think that's really what it boils down to there. You're just buying in bulk, and you're just like, you know, they're plastic, not metal, which is fine, I guess. Of course, the only problem is it gets hard to mod them if you really want to. You can, it's just not always practical.
No, so. I agree completely here. Like, I like the little posi sheets. I wish them luck, but we, you know, I'll be honest. We don't know if you're going to be able to make it. So, if you want to advertise for it, now's the time to advertise.
Yeah. No, I mean, we mention these just because you never know. I mean, so there might be enough people who listen to this podcast go like, hey, I really want that, you know. But I look at it from the standpoint, here's the thing, they went $35,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means that they need, just at the journeyman level, to receive two sets, which is $36 or more, they need 1,000 people.
Not going to happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it is that, you know, and you need about 2,000 at the apprentice level. I'm just saying, you need to base it off of, well, who's people who are going to buy the absolute minimum. You can't assume that you're going to get, I mean, even their max size is $250. That's the retailer. Let's just go with the 200. 200 into, so 36, what did I say, 36,000 or 35,000?
35,000, I think.
Okay, so 35,000 divided by $200. You need 175 people at the max level.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. Okay, then we're going to give our helpful tips for Kickstarters yet again. Start small.
Well, I mean, it might be that that's the cheapest he can do, but I would have probably taken this to go like, interesting, but no.
Yeah.
You know, at least they're doing, you know what, I give them credit. At least they're doing it as a Kickstarter and not dumping a bunch of money into something and then finding out that it's impossible.
Oh, I agree completely here.
So, yeah. I give them credit for that. All right, well, why don't we get into the first topic, which is, drum roll,
yep.
Killer robots.
Yes.
You know, and who doesn't love a good killer robot?
Yeah, I brought it up simply because we needed a really interesting topic. We've done, in the show, monster topics in the past, but usually they've been fantasy-based, so I thought it would be fun to do something a little out of the box and see where it leads. Ultimately, why robot enemies are scary? They're creepy. They move unnaturally and often have an uncanny effect or just don't have facial expressions. Pragmatic. Most robots may not have the same ethical considerations as you do, and may do things that set off your morality in the name of expediency. They may tear apart your car and use it for spare parts, or decide a hostage isn't prudent to keep at this time. Dogmatic. They most likely cannot be reasoned with, as they have a task to be performed. Unceasing. Robots don't stop until their task is done. Disposable. You beat the scary killbot. There's another 30 being created by the big bad every hour. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Pleasant dreams.
All of a sudden, the only thing I can think of during that thing is, not that it's a killer robot, but I was thinking of the old heavy metal movie.
Oh, heck yeah.
And there's that one scene where, you know, well, where she's like, I don't want you to come. I don't know if I don't want you to come home and find you screwing the toaster. I don't know why that stuck in my head.
It's part of the fun. Plus, that's a classic heavy metal. Some.
Oh, I know, and just so many of the comedical greats are actually in that movie. Strangely,
dude.
You know, John Candy, Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, your perspective's fucked. But, you know, you just let your hands operate the controls. God. I'm sorry. That's one of those movies that, you know, whatever that fucking, I don't even want to call it a sequel. Whatever that sequel was not a good sequel.
Well, that was the movie that was basically called I'm the Director, My Wife's Hot, and I'm going to Show You Why. And it might not have been a bad movie, other than the fact that modern movie cinematography in animated form doesn't really exist anymore, other than maybe a couple of things. You might be able to get a couple of art house films out of it, and it kind of breaks your heart because they've all make more money by doing video games nowadays, which we'll dovetail later when we go into the next topic.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it was like that. There was that weird sequel, Heavy Metal 2000, was it?
Yeah, that I remember seeing that once. It wasn't bad. They tried to do a full narrative movie.
Yeah, but you know, but that was the great thing about the original Heavy Metal movie. I know we're digressing here, but that was the great thing about the original. It was like a collection of really weird Twilight Zone, Outer Limits kind of thing.
Yeah, loosely bonded with a really scary green ball.
Exactly, the Lochnar.
And again, it has a fantastic soundtrack.
Ugh, I know. It, you know, sometimes the girlfriend laments at the current state of music. You know,
in a decade, you'll find something new to lament about.
Well, no, I mean, it's just you know, she favors a particular artist, and she's like, why do these assholes get contracts? They don't have any artistic skill. They can't perform, and yet, you know. Her guy can't get a recording contract.
Well,
you know,
I hate to say it, but if you really want something, you almost have to go directly to the fans nowadays. It worked for the Beeb, and that scares the heck out of me.
You know, yeah, well, we won't go into that, but yeah, so. But yeah, Killer Robots. You know what, though? I think the last time we talked about this, I know people are going to, we talked about this before, yeah, because we recorded the episode, it got lost, and here we are again. But, it was interesting because you brought up the futuristic stuff because you're like, everything was fantasy-based. But on the other hand, there is a lot of fantasy-based robots that, and they are fantasy, you know, because, you know, we go to, you know, Clockwork Men, you go to animated statues, you go to, you know, freaking, for the various golems, if you will, you know, clay golem, flesh golem, you know, I mean, let's face it, Frankenstein's monster was kind of the prototypical robot, even though some say, well, he's a human, whatever, you know, in some ways it really, that was kind of the original terror of a killer robot, even though, you know, you could argue one way or the other in the book, who was the bigger monster, the monster or Frankenstein himself.
Yeah, it was flesh brought back to life using alchemical processes.
Yeah, you know.
Isn't that far from building a robot using a chemical, you know, using electricity to keep it alive?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, of course, and I always said that, you know, I think zombies and skeletons kind of fall into that category as well of being kind of prototypical robots. I mean, you talk about killer robot in terms of like an animated form or, you know, like an animated object form. I have to go with the old Jason's and the Argonauts movie.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to bring up the Harryhausen skeleton scene, which is one of the greatest stop animation scenes of all time.
Oh, yeah. No. You know, he actually, when he did that scene, they actually filmed it first, the guys fighting, and then he actually created skeletons to match the sword movements. Yeah. You know, this is pre-computers, people, and I swear that scene holds up today. There's computer animation that I've seen that does not hold up, and I swear a lot of his stuff still holds up.
You're preaching to the choir.
I mean, you take probably the epitome of his work in many ways, which was the original Clash of the Titans.
Yes.
And it's like, that still holds up. At least I think it does.
Well, among other things, they didn't shake the bloody camera.
You know, but you have that. You have like, what is it? The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, you know?
Yeah.
Which is another great movie.
Mm-hmm. And also from the same bloody movie, from Jason the Argonauts, you got Talos, which literally is a giant robot.
Yeah.
They're bronze, who basically kicks the crap out of everybody until they figure out a way to actually take it out.
That's the one with the little heel thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and in some ways, it's like some sort of, you always figured it was some sort of weird steam power because they unplug it and like some weird strange liquid comes out.
Yep. You know. Got rid of brake fluid.
Brake fluid, yeah, pretty much.
Transmission fluid, that's it.
Transmission fluid. But no, I mean, still, I mean, those are the, you know, I mean, that's kind of the epitome of the killer robot from a fantasy perspective. But yeah, you get to modern stuff and you have, you know, like, let's face it, you have all the cyborgs, you have the Terminator movies.
Yep.
You have, you know. I mean, hell, you have obviously all the Matrix movies from the other side, the non-Matrix side of the Matrix movies.
Or, yeah, that was pretty intimidating. Or you go back to the 70s, you get one of my favorite movies, The Black Hole.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely
terrifying Maximilian with the rotating blades of doom.
That was terrifying. I mean, I remember watching that as a child, and that was scary. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the classics there. Or you go into the other material that you have when it comes to killer robots. Like, we live in a modern society with drones, and I'm going to take one of my first experiences with drones, which dates back to the 80s, which was a Dirty Harry movie of all things. It was the Deadpool, where they had the little RC cars that blow up.
Right, and, you know, I mean, hell, I mean, even Batman the Animated Series stole that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Grey Ghost.
Oh, that was awesome.
Which was great, because of the Adam West voiced the Grey Ghost.
Well, absolutely. That's they set up a thing to Kevin Conroy, which is just fantastic. But ultimately, robots, the concept of killer robots is a long-running thing. Hell, the term robots actually comes from an old novel called Ruhr, where they call them robots because it's a Czech term for slave.
Right.
Or equivalent thereof. And then they basically uprise and take the crap out of them, which is killer robots. Or...
yeah.
Or Metropolis, where
robot
that literally is built in the thing of the female lead and ends up setting a revolution to destroy everything.
Yeah.
Destroy the Tower of Babel.
I think you can watch Metropolis on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. You should, even if it is kind of wacky, because, well, there's still 17 minutes missing, but they're, the one you can get nowadays is a lot more complete than the one they used to run.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, that's that. It is fascinating that there's a movie that you actually cannot watch the completeness of because it's just missing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, again, there's a lot of stuff that gets missing over time, but I'm just glad we're able to find as much as we did.
Yeah. No. Ultimately. But, you know, I mean, there's other things you can do with killer robots, obviously. You know, it's like, I think the biggest problem with killer robots from a character perspective is they always think it's something you have to directly defeat. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense.
You know, it's like, I've been in scenarios where it's just like, well, sometimes you should just avoid the killer robots. Well, the Game Master put it here in place. We must be able to defeat it. I always hate that argument. I mean, that's kind of like this weird, I don't want to say modern day argument, but I see it a lot of times more in modern day play where the assumption is that, you know, I think it has to do with, there's a game balance. Well, the encounter level that the player should have, is based off of whatever. I'm like, no, it's based off of what I decide. That, you know, I want to throw something out there to kind of, I know this sounds like railroading, but it's like you want to force the players to maybe reconsider a course of action. Or it's a plot point. It's like, you can't defeat this thing normally. You have to decide another way. You know, which means that, you know, hey, you might have to put, you know, you might have to go, you know, instead of defeating it directly, you may have to go assault the control center somewhere, which is just as dangerous, but more like, with a higher probability of success.
Yeah, because at least that way you're dealing with not trying to stop the giant robot or mecha or something.
Yeah.
This is going to destroy downtown Tokyo. It's easier to attack the control center where you actually have a chance in hell of actually doing something against the enemy.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, sometimes I even think that, you know, the threat of a killer robot is important because you can force players, you know, like, who's to say that a killer robot might not interact with you in, like, in a more logical fashion? You know, and I think this gets to, again, the way, you know, what kind of story you're trying to tell. Is the killer robot an actual enemy of yours or just something that's an inconvenience or something that you need to negotiate with?
Yeah, like, you know, what happens when you find an ancient rune, somebody flips the switch, and suddenly it serves up an assembly line. One of my favorite video games is System Shock 2. Well, it's primarily about an evil AI that basically thinks has a god complex trying to take down one of her children who's created a biological weapon from heck. There's a lot of robots that go run around there. Like, they have protocol droids that come up and want to help you, but when they get within a certain proximity, they blow up. I think that's one of the first ones that actually did that. Or you're fighting the cargo robots because you're considered an unauthorized trooper. You know, unauthorized intruder in the area when you actually go in there. So you might be able to stop the invincible death robot by waving a black card in front of him because you have Klaxis, so take that.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the computer aspects of the thing, and you can have a lot of fun. And not necessarily, like, killer robots don't necessarily have to be an enemy. They could be an ally. Either they could be a PC or a piece of equipment. Like, I think we talked about it in one of the last shows, how nobody wants to be the guy sitting in the vehicle while everybody else is doing something. Because you're burning your skull and turning the radio on. But if you have, like, a robot acting as the sentinel or self-defense system, you can. Everybody goes off, your car's safe because it has a killer robot inside.
Right. Yeah. And stuff. I mean, in some ways, that's why I do like in science fiction games having robots, because it's like, okay, so, you know, you want the players to do most of the have at least most of the action based roles, but a robot makes a great engineer.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because it's like, well, he can do some of the engineering functions, so you don't have to worry about it. Of course, if he gets offline, you're kind of screwed. But, you know, you want to shoot the guns, you want to fly the ship, but you don't want to do the engineering portion. That's the boring part. So it's great to have a robot do that.
Yeah, it's basically GM Fiat.
Yeah.
And MC that does all the work for me. Take that.
But on the other hand, they feel, I don't know, they feel more protective over the robot. I don't know why. People do.
Well, it's a bit of the, it depends on what sort of robot you do. Like, there's the concept of the Uncanny Valley, which I'm pretty sure you're familiar with, where the more cute but inhuman a robot is, the more you project on it. But when you try to get it more human, it actually gets creepier because it's getting a little too close to the human condition. It's the same reason why clowns are creepy, because they put up enough makeup to seem less than human.
Mm.
And it's kind of that idea there, until we get to that point where humans are basically replicants. And even then, there's these weird psychological quirks and tics that we do that don't always come across when it comes to a mechanical life form. In fact, they would not understand it. Or what if your house is one giant smart house and then decides it doesn't like you?
All of a sudden, I'm thinking of that damn movie. It was from the 80s.
Ah, yes.
I think we talked about it before, didn't we?
I'm getting a serious case of deja vu on that one, but yes.
Yeah, we did talk about that. Electric Dreams?
Is that right? I think you're absolutely right on that one. Now it's starting to jog my memory. Yeah, 1984. Yeah, it was basically an artificially intelligent PC and his human owner find themselves in a romantic rivalry over a woman.
See, there you go. There's a good, interesting use for a killer robot.
Absolutely.
You know? Sometimes all you have to do is remember a really bad movie. I don't think it was that bad a movie, but it's weird these days.
Well, again, you can crib from anything given time. You just have to figure out how you want to crib from it.
Right.
And
who was in that movie?
You know, it's just part of the fun when it comes to that sort of thing here.
Virginia Madsen was in that one.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the only other question I'm going to ask at this point is there any particular games that help fulfill the killer robot fetish better than others?
That's an interesting question. It's weird because I don't know. I mean, I'd almost want to say, even though they're not robots, they're mecha. I would almost say, like, you know, some of the weird Battletech stuff kind of fits that a little better.
Oh, definitely.
Or, you know, I think I mentioned this last time. I have a game. I don't know where it is, but it was something made back in the 80s. It had one book. The game never went anywhere, but it was called Droids.
And the whole thing was
you make a droid character, and then, you know, they never described what kind of adventures they expect you to have, because it was just really the entire rule book was mostly just how to build them and how to fight them, and there was, like, nothing else. And the rule book. And it was like, wow, you know. And it was fascinating because it's like, oh, you know, because you have so many build points to make your character. And, you know, to use these build points to buy, like, you know, power and, you know, some sort of form of transportation. You know, you could have, you know, legs, or you could have tracks. And, you know, over time, you know, you could actually, when you killed the other robot, you could steal parts off that guy, scavenge whatever you had, and use that. So it actually was kind of weird because at a certain level, I'm like, wow, I mean, and of course, you know, you have to work with a certain, you know, the bigger your, it was also weird because the bigger, was it build points? It was cost points, but because then they had something called bulk points. And because you added up all the bulk points, and that's how big your robot was. And the bigger you were, the easier it was to hit you.
That makes sense to me, because you're a big target.
Yeah, so, you know, and it's just like, you know, you could have some armor, but, you know, they never described how society worked for that. It's like, and I always said, you know, it was one of those games that I said, you know, it's interesting, but there was a missed opportunity to have a fully more functional set of rules for a robot society.
Yeah, and force comes to words, crib heavily from Astro Boy.
Well, I mean, just from the standpoint, you know, the whole idea is there were no humans left.
Exactly.
You know, because the robots killed them all. So, literally, you were playing the robots that had killed humanity.
Hooray!
Oh, you know, and so I was just like, wow, that's fascinating. And they never, you know, it assumed it was Earth, but who knows? Maybe it was just all the robots on a particular planet. You know, did they form their own cities? Was there like some sort of weird, you know, it's like there wasn't enough information on how to actually role play that game. And I sometimes think the problem it had was none of the characters were human enough.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the complaint that I get with people. It's like, well, I want to play an elf. Well, what's, you know, it's just like, it's honestly, a lot of times when we play characters on even in fantasy games or even science fiction games, it really, you know, people are like, I'm trying to get, you know, well, what would my alien, you know, some people do that, but it's like, realistically, it's all rubber mask humans.
Yeah, it's basically Star Trek aliens.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can go, oh, well, they would do this. Well, that's just a society thing. It really has nothing to do. It's like, because you really, you know, I know very few people that can think like an alien.
That's probably a good thing, because those would be sociopaths.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, so, but, I mean, is there an actual game that would make killer robots a good killer robot game, or is it perfect for it? I don't know. I mean, have you found one, by any chance?
Not really. Like, confession time. I've actually done a book on robot mechanical life forms for my own RPG called Dark Revelations Book of Progress. But ultimately, I found really awesome robot books about killer robots. But most of the time, the killer robots are coming for you in some way, shape, or form. Like, I would argue the best example I can think of the genre, if you ever want to try to survive in a really horrific dystopian future, is GURPS Reign of Steel.
Mm.
Where the idea is, Terminator happened, that instead of just one Skynet, there's like six or seven.
Hmm.
And they divvied up the world between them. And you're getting politics happening between artificial intelligences as they produce robots. And basically, each one decides how humans survive, what they're doing, what they're trying to emphasize. And one of the AIs has literally decided that no life should exist and has literally made their area sterile completely, which is absolutely terrifying. Whereas other ones end up using the humans as minions or tools, or end up using genetically engineered material, or basically become one giant green factory. So none of them see eye to eye, and your best bet if you're living in this environment is to try to basically play them off each other, as well as try to run the various terrorist organizations against these, you know, essential robotic gods. But yeah, I find it really fascinating when it comes down to stuff like that. But beyond that, the only other one that comes to mind off the top of my head is, do you know Darwin's World?
No.
Darwin's World was a D20 version of Gamma World that was done by Chris something or another. And he wrote a book called Metal Gods, where the idea was it was actually the robots that caused the apocalypse, then found out that there wasn't enough parts to fix themselves and went into hibernation. So anywhere you enter might end up waking up these suckers. Oh, I got another one for you. Not directly, but the third part was definitely appropriate. It's one you brought up in the last one. Gamma World's Golden Legion.
Oh, Legions of Gold.
Yeah, Legions of Gold, yes.
Well, I guess Gamma World had a bunch of killer robots. I mean, after all, they did have the Deathbot.
Dude, I actually own the D20 version of their monster manual, the Mutants and Machines or something.
I don't know. I don't have that version.
No, I understand. But they had some truly terrifying robots, like one that's basically acting as a biological robot which will steal your brain. It has proper units in order to carry the damn things. So yeah, they had a lot of fun with some of the designs. So
all right. Well, I think we need to briefly cover the video game portion.
Oh, absolutely. This was Tristan's topic, so we'll take it as best we can.
Yeah. He was and I guess, I mean, the question he posed is basically, can you take a video game and make it a good role-playing game, I guess?
That sounds about right.
You know, because, you know, we've obviously done it the other way around, where we've taken, we've taken pencil and paper games and made video games out of them. And, I mean, you could argue that, well, almost all video games owe some sort of allegiance to D&D because, you know, without D&D, there wouldn't be hit points in various games. Whether you like it or not, it's a hit point. It's like, I have 100 health. That's a hit point, pal.
Exactly. And on top, just a matter of numbering, levels, progression. Hell, I'd argue that the earliest medium that shows this cross-pollination is the old Ultima series back in the 80s.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a direct, you know, direct descendant, I mean, in a way. I mean, it's a direct, you know, of all this stuff. But, you know, obviously the other way around. And I'm hard-pressed to say that I think that you can make a good video, you know, game based off of a video game. I mean, I guess the closest was, what was that? Was that BioShock?
Yeah.
That fan-based one that, you know, caused a lot of stir in the innies a while back.
Yeah, I think it was definitely one of the BioWare games. I'm just not sure which
one. I'm not sure which one, because honestly, I don't play enough modern video games anymore. I have too many other things going on.
Yeah, but you also bring up a very valid point. If you do decide to crib from like a video game of some sort, you might not have the license for it.
Yeah.
And well, so your fan hack, which is perfectly fine. It just don't try to do it commercially, is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, it's funny because even regular game companies have that problem where they make a game while they're trying to get the license, and then they can't get the license. DC Heroes is a result of that. Originally, they were trying to get the Marvel license.
I can see that.
And when that fell through, they converted it to... They ended up getting the DC license instead.
Well, it's not a bad license, all things considered. Or what happened with Margaret Weiss a few years back, where they got a game, they built a really awesome Marvel system, but they had a pie-in-the-sky belief they were going to get like that many books. I saw it, I was interested in picking up the X-book when it finally came out, but they never produced enough books, and they ended up pulling the license. So if you have a copy of this book, count yourself lucky.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, that's it. It's like, can you make a video game? I guess the best you can do is take inspiration from video games, but you can't ever do a one-to-one. I mean, because it's like, you actually look at all the adventure stories that are in video games, and it's just like, at a certain level, you can't just borrow them directly. But this, I think that goes along with anything, you know. You can't borrow book material, you can't borrow movie material as much as we want to.
Well, if you steal from three different sources and mix them together, they become their own original idea, ultimately. And video games have a very unique problem that, ultimately, a role-playing game doesn't have, which is, you complain about railroading in an RPG. In a video game, there literally probably isn't anything beyond the railroad. You know, when you come down to it there, so... Don't expect things to fall the same way as the actual adventure. Like, I would take the base concept. Like, for example, I will use System Shock 2. You're on a spaceship, there's a killer AI, and there's also a biological contaminant that's basically destroyed by the crew. You're the survivors. What do you do? Don't expect it to go the same way as the video game. Because adventurers have this bad habit. What is the first thing someone might do? They might grab, like, a vacuum suit and go into space.
Right.
And there's nothing programmed in the original game for that. But theoretically, if they have the skill set, it's physically possible. So they might end up bypassing a lot of your scenarios because of that.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, how many... there really haven't been too many games that have gone the other way. I'm thinking the only RPG that I know of is... There was an EverQuest RPG, right?
There is. It actually was done during the D20 era.
Yeah, I'm just saying. That's the only one I can think of that kind of went the other way.
Oh, and WoW also did a D20 derivative back in the day that I don't think anybody liked, but that was part of the.
But there was a World of Warcraft one, wasn't there?
Absolutely, and again, wasn't that bad for the concepts? It's like the same complaint about it was the same complaints the 4th edition D&D has. It kind of has some cool mechanics and stuff, but it's not either Warcraft or D20.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like, you know, that's not to say that, you know, some video games don't have interesting gaming worlds, because they do. Some of them do.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it does get to a point where it's like, well, what are we talking about here? I mean, video games are just another storytelling medium, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you kind of have the same problem that you have with any type of media translation. It's like the same way that sometimes books don't make good movies.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know... movies don't make sometimes make good games. You know? I mean, you know, facts. What was that?
Well, you have trouble filtering out the derivative effects, what the essence is.
Yeah.
And once you have the essence, you can probably switch it over, but realize it's going to change the product dramatically.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you have this problem. I mean, I love it when you find a book that goes like, well, and we've seen it in some of the Kickstarters, where there's going to be a Savage World version, a Pathfinder version, and, like, I don't know, let's just go with Ruined Quest version or whatever.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you're just like, there's no way that, you know, that's great. It's like, okay, so this game world has these certain concepts. Well, each game system has a different set of world physics, if you will, whether you like it or not. Let's just say it's fantasy and you have a wizard in each one. They're going to look differently. They'll all have different spells. You know what I mean? And some, you know, two systems might have fireballs and the last one might not have a fireball. Well, what if that's something important that all your wizards cast?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that doesn't make sense. You know, you made some changes. The powers can be drastically different. You know, one system may have a druid and another one may not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, well, okay, so in one system he's a druid, in another system he's just a nature cleric or priest or something like that, where, yeah, that's similar, but that's not the same character.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, it's got close approximations. Like, I guess if you're doing something like a superhero environment, you're never going to build the same characters in the thing. Yet, paradoxically, I realize what the best use of a video game in a role-playing game could be. As a horror movie. You're stuck in a game, there's finite resources, there are finite results, and you have to figure out a way to get out and survive while still playing the game. I don't know about you, but that'd make one hell of a horror scenario.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think if you, maybe not as a, not as a video game, but as a, again, as an RPG that might it be like the whole scenario you're in the video game, was like that, there's that one, anime, Sword World Online.
Yeah, I remember that one vaguely.
And, you know, that was fascinating because it's like, okay, well, you know, the players are trapped. You know, it's like that whole fish out of water. Or it kind of reminds me of the what the fuck is the name of that series of books? Joel Rosenberg, Gardens of the Flame series.
Okay.
You know, where that was the original intro is like, you know, it was funny because the players. You know, the characters were actually playing an RPG in that game. And the guy that was the game master actually purposely transported him to the game world.
Yeah.
You know,
Dungeons & Dragons phenomena.
What was that?
Dungeons & Dragons phenomena, where everybody jumps on the roller coaster and ends up in, like...
Yeah. You know, that it's sad that actually that animated series was, in some aspects, way ahead of its time.
Well, dude... I'm going to say something that's probably semi-unpopular, but I'm glad Eric was in the party because he pointed out the GM was stringing him along.
Yeah.
Okay. But that can wait another day to go into a full rant about that. Maybe a future topic. Let us know.
So, but no, you know, it is, like I said, it is fascinating that's, I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I think you can take elements from video games and put it in a game. But I don't know if you could do a direct version of a video game into an RPG.
Well, the thing is, you could probably take the basic storylines. You might even have some of the monsters designed from the visual effects. The best way to do a QuickTime event would probably be some sort of alternative mechanic that requires you to roll certain skills, like you replace that with a skill check of some sort. Yeah. Or is more complex. But... ultimately, the crossover would be the world, not the mechanics.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I mean, but even then, sometimes you're just like, is there enough information to actually make that world? Because, I mean, if you think about it, let's take Half-Life as an example.
Yes.
You know, very complex environment, if you will, that if you were a player character group, basically it's one huge fucking dungeon crawl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, that's it. It's like, you know, I guess so on a small scale you could do it, but it's like there's never been enough material released about the rest of the world.
Yeah, and there's only four will get you so far.
Right. So, I don't know.
And again, you're basically in a fascist state with trans-dimensional creatures from another plane that don't even use the same technology here. And then you got a character who literally will string you along, who basically plays the Dungeon Master role, and probably does not have your interests at heart in the first place.
Right.
So, I guess it's doable, but you'd really have to have the meeting zero with your players, decide what the guidelines would be for that concept before you start, because it's not going to be a perfect match, but if it's close enough and you're having fun, then go for it.
Does make you wonder, though, if you wanted to do something like that, what would be a good system for that?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I mean, I have my go-to system of Savage Worlds, but I don't know if that would quite fit well.
Well, depends on the game, but I'd imagine if you're trying to keep it simple and light, maybe Cartoon Action Hour might work.
Hmm?
You know, you just take the basic elements of the game, you do it like a cartoon that was done with it, like there's been enough of those, and you just sort of play it through like almost at 2 degrees of separation.
Huh.
But that's just a crazy idea there.
Well, there you go. So I don't know if we even really touched on Tristan's topic very well, but
we'll revisit it when Tristan becomes available, maybe at some later point.
I can't wait to find out what happened to him.
Oh, so, absolutely.
However, if you do have anything you do want to tell us, we did get one comment that we don't have a time to actually talk about. So in a week, I'll include that. It was a comment on one of our previous episodes. I just received it today, and considering everything that we just talked about, there's just not enough time. So, but if you do want to send us a comment, you can send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com. You can go to our RPG Circus Facebook page, post something on our wall. Go to our Google Plus page, post something there. You can, if you go to our homepage or the Facebook page, there's a link to the SpeakPipe application. When you click it, you can send us a voice comment. So that's cool. I always like those. We haven't had a good one of those in a little bit. So, you know, if you send us one, and as long as it's usable, it will show up on the air. I almost guarantee it. So if you send me something, 95% chance it will show up on the air, I think. I only say there's a 5% chance because there's always a small chance that whatever you send me, I'm like, I can't use this. Basically, if you sent me an audio comment that's just all the word fuck all the time, then I might not be able to send you that.
Try to be creative in your comments.
Exactly. If you do want some stickers, send me an email at info@rpgcircus.com. Ask for stickers. Send me an address. Give me a show topic. That's just to make sure that it is an actual valid request for stickers. And, you know what? We have actually officially switched our recording nights to Monday nights. So if you want to ever come on and just even do like a guest post spot, send me an email and we can see what we can try to arrange. I'm more than happy to do that. I love that. I love getting new blood, new ideas. You know, that's what keeps this thing fun and fresh.
So, absolutely. Like, you got to go outside the box a little bit. Otherwise, you just stay your life inside a cardboard box.
Hey. You know, I'm two steps away from the cardboard box. You know, I'm plugging my internet into my neighbor's cardboard box.
Sweet. Oh, look, I have a new game, Cardboard Box Wars.
Oh, that just sounds horrid.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else before we go?
No, I think we covered the basics.
Yeah, I think so. And so basically, because of the way this episode's shaken out, we'll see you in about a week. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.